This is Dirt and Sprague.
Cal, the deep drive to right field. Way back and gone. Up to the second deck in right field. Cal Raleigh, when will we stop being amazed? His 36th home run.
With Andy Dirt Johnson and Brendan Sprague.
Patrick hits a high drive. Deep right center field. This one is off the top of the wall. And it ricochets. And it's rolling on the warning track. Two runs are in. Bailey coming around third. Patrick Bailey scores. It's an inside the park walk-off home run.
Dirt and Sprague on 1080 The Fan.
Good morning. Welcome into Dirt and Sprague, a Joe Fish a dish. No Patrick Harris, no Rashad Taylor, nobody. But I do got Jason Swigart across the glass.
I'm always here.
The pillar, the tent pole that holds up this station. Thank God you're here. Thank God I got someone to hang out with.
There you go. Well, thank God the Hops summer nightmare is over. They finally won their second game in their last 19 last night. So
I don't know how Dirt and Sprague. I just don't know how you guys do it. I really don't.
You adjust. You never get used to it. Yeah. I tell what do you? You just adjust but now fortunately, I'm in a situation with an empty nest. And my wife, works. So if I need to take an afternoon nap to catch up,
a little nappy poo,
I'm taking a nap.
Yeah, usually I have a Sunday nap. I feel like a Sunday nap is always great, especially
the
when
final round of the PGA Tour Sunday nap.
Oh yeah, baby.
Yeah, right around noon.
Oh yeah, yeah. Get back.
And you wake up just in time to see who's coming down the stretch and winning this bad boy.
Get done from sports Sunday. Usually shoot on over to my girlfriend's house, make like a little bagel sandwich, or get myself some Pine State, and then promptly pass out on her couch. But there will be a Wednesday nap. I already see it in my future. Whether it happens in this building or not, there will be a Wednesday nap happening. During that open there, you had the clip of Patrick Bailey for the San Francisco Giants.
Yeah, how wild was that?
Dude, insane. There were two inside the park home runs last night. One in Sacramento. And then I think actually it was the first pitch of the game.
Yes.
For the Sacramento Athletics, if you will. Lawrence Butler hit it inside the park home run. And then, there was one in San Francisco. Two within short distances of each other.
Walk-off home run from the catcher.
Yeah, first time that's happened since 2016. I'm going to San Francisco at the end of August. I will be going there to see my lowly Orioles take on the Giants in San Francisco. I think that would be one way to lose a game that I actually would be okay with, especially since my Orioles aren't playing for anything right now and are slowly fading into obscurity. Just whenever I think they're going to make some sort of run, then something like last night happens between them and the Mets. But I think watching a team beat me by an inside the park home run, that's one of those where you just kind of be like, you know what? I'm upset. But that was pretty effing cool. I mean, that was the first one since 2016, almost 10 years.
Yeah.
I mean, that I would have been thrilled to be in the stadium, regardless of what team I'm rooting for a moment like that. Just the anticipation and the buildup of seeing that ball go out towards the wall, hit off the top of the wall, and then he's just racing around the bases trying to score. I wish that would have happened when I was there. But I'm going to be in San Francisco at the end of the year. Have you ever been to Oracle Park for a game?
No. I have been by it when the Pilots would go play the University of San Francisco. We would stay fairly near. So, if it was a nice day, I'd take a walk or whatever. And it's not that far from where we would be staying.
Yeah,
I've been right around outside of it and seen it. But I have not been to a game there.
I've walked by it in a drunken stupor at one point when I was in San Francisco. I was like, let's go. Let's look at the stadium. Let's go look at the Willie Mays statue.
No, it's great. I mean, it's right there kind of as you walk around on the south to the south from Fisherman's Wharf?
I'm trying to find tickets, and everywhere I look for like suggestions of like what section, what area of the state, everybody says there is not a bad seat in the house of that stadium.
No, it's not. It's not one of the larger stadiums. When they, you know, obviously the old Candlestick mistake by the lake was massive because they played football there too. But no, when they did that, they scaled it back to being a little bit more intimate. So, if I was going, I would think I would want to go for a series, you know, two or three games and kind of sit in different spots, because I definitely think I would want to sit in the little strip there in right field.
Yeah.
That looks pretty cool.
Flip over some K's.
Sure.
That's apparently if you get like the front row in right field there, then you have the possibility to flip over one of the K's. I do not want to be in those seats as the rooting for the opposing team. I do not want to help flip over any strikeout K's for the Giants team.
I'll flip them over if, you know, when Shohei goes and pitches there the first time. But, try not to get beat up.
But, yeah, I'm absolutely stoked to go to that stadium. What's the best baseball stadium you have been to?
Ooh.
I mean, is it going to be, are you going to say Dodger Stadium? Just
I still have never been to Dodger Stadium. It's one of the, I've seen the Dodgers play in all sorts of places, but I haven't been to Dodger Stadium.
My God.
I don't have family or, you know, just not in Southern California. So, no, the best, I got to go to Fenway and see a game when Pedro Martinez pitched.
That stupid, pointless, giant green wall.
And it was pretty awesome. We were out in the triangle in center field, and that's where all the Dominicans were out there, and the conga lines were going, and it was just the energy in that place, that glorious old dump. It's a dump
there
underneath.
Were conga lines in center field.
Oh yeah, it was fantastic.
It sounds like a Korean baseball game.
So the ballpark that is really gorgeous that you have no reason to go see the team play there is Coors Field. I was overly impressed with Coors Field.
I hear Coors Field is one of the best.
It's
like
gorgeous.
Live, yeah.
The what they did with the neighborhood around it and building it up and all of those team, sorts of things.
The team definitely does not match the aura of that stadium.
but yeah, it is. The views are great. City views are great. I was really impressed with Coors. I went to Chase Field and the roof was closed, and so
I've been to Chase Field as well. It's huge. It wasn't spring training. It was I guess preseason game or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
This was a long time ago. I think I was maybe 14. It was Yankees Diamondbacks, but they closed the roof halfway through the game because it was that early spring rain in Arizona that crept up, and so I was able to catch a game there. I've gone to Camden. That was the first.
That's one I want to get to.
That was the first That is why I'm an Orioles fan. That was the first MLB stadium that I had ever gone to was Camden Yards. And
the first major league game I ever went to was the old Oakland Coliseum. Back in 1986.
And you're here to tell the story. You survived.
Well, that was back during the Bash Brothers era.
Oh, okay. When it was worth going to Oakland.
Yeah.
Oakland Coliseum.
So, no, we were on a high school band trip in the Bay Area, and so they got us all group seats. Plenty of seats available even back then. It was like, I'm trying to remember who the Red Sox were there.
Yeah. I'm curious.
But, yeah, Sock and Seiko. Just roid one out of there.
Roid one out of there. I feel like that should be a term that is used going forward for anybody that hit a home run during that era. He had 45 roids that year.
Yep.
I'm curious if anybody that's listening, 503-864-6326, has gone to Oracle Park, and if you can give me any suggestion for best bang for buck. I think what we're looking at, because it's going to be me, the lady, and it's going to be my son, who he's going to check off two California ballparks this year. He went to Angel Stadium
just
a few weeks ago, which I've gone to that stadium as well. But yeah, I'm trying to lock down where do they get tickets. There's part of me that wants to go club level. But also there's part of me that doesn't want to spend much on tickets because I think it's a ballpark where you can take a lap and walk all the way around.
All the way around. Yeah.
Which I want to do.
And
I don't really want to spend money on tickets if I'm going to take a whole lap.
Yeah, and are there gathering spots? The center field landing at T-Mobile, one of the great spots.
Right.
You know, so you can get a center field seat for, I don't know what they're dinging you for these days, 10, 15 bucks or something. Actually, my favorite spot, if I don't have like cool, good seats at T-Mobile that I trip into somehow and don't have to shell out, is to get outfield, center field, bleacher seat. And then the landing over the bullpen, but below the bleachers.
Yes.
They've got pad. You can kind of lean and there's room to set your food and drinks on.
Correct. Yeah.
And if you're okay standing, it is a great view. You're looking right down the left field line into, and you feel like you're on top of the outfielders.
Yeah. Bullpen's right there. So you're watching them.
You're watching the bullpen right below you. And if you're, you know, just hanging out, chilling, just want to get in, don't mind standing. That is a great venue. I've seen a number of Mariner games there just doing that on the cheap.
Last time I was at T-Mobile Park, I was in those bleachers in left field above the bullpen. And it was the Felix Hernandez jersey retirement night.
Ah.
And so we actually saw Felix walking through like the tunnel, getting ready to walk out of the left field bullpen area. And the pandemonium of people seeing Felix like getting ready to run out there, that was a cool moment.
Yeah, I was up there. Why did I go up there? Well, Sprague and I went up a few years ago to see Shohei pitch a day game. It's like on a random, I don't know, Tuesday or Wednesday or something. We're like, they got a day game. And I was like, yeah, let's go up. Shohei was pitching. And so that was fun. And then went with the buddies with Dodgers were up there a few years ago. And we all got a bunch of people together and sat in the left field seats. And, of course, every time the Dodgers go up there, every time I go, they lose in nefarious fashion. They were no hit one year by six different, like it was a combined no hitter by the Mariners against the Dodgers,
worse.
Like against six pitchers.
You're like, please, someone, just hit one of these guys, for the love of God. Yeah, my Orioles, I've seen them three times in Seattle. They are 3-0 while Joe Fisher is in attendance. And so hopefully they can make it 1-0 while they're at Oracle Park. I'm stoked. That's one, I mean.
No, that'll be great. Baltimore's a city I've never been to that I'm curious about.
Baltimore.
Like if you went, like I think, as far as an NFL game day experience, like a primetime game for the Ravens, I think would be amazing.
Yes. I've been to Baltimore one time. I was 9 years old, but I still remember that day like it was yesterday. As long as you hang out like near the bay and like the plaza. And
I understand there's some parts of Baltimore that are notoriously salty, but you need to be careful of. You're not there when you're not supposed to be.
You hit the nail on the head, though. A nighttime game for the Ravens,
like in September,
wearing,
if you had a Saturday afternoon game at Oriole Park, Camden Yards, and then they had the Sunday night game.
Oh God, sign me up, baby.
I would take a weekend in Baltimore for that because I'm sure there's some excellent seafood to be had as well.
Yeah, crab cake, soft shell crab, baby, all day long. I just can't wait.
That'll be a blast.
One of those parks I wanted to check off for a while. And I'm like, I said, like, I want to go for an Orioles game. I want to see my team. Like, that has got to be the bare minimum. And that wasn't the case for so long because the interleague play, it was like, they would only go to each other's stadiums like every like eight seasons, it seemed like. And now it's every 2 years that they're at each other's stadium. So I'm absolutely stoked.
Cool.
Yeah, I can't wait for it. If you want to text in, like I said, if you're looking for suggestions, I already got some sections here.
Oh,
that
there
someone
you
texted
go.
In that you get a great view of the field and the bay, which I'm looking for as far as seats go. And I want to, I see this text. Someone's like, I just wait and scalp the day of the game, either outside the stadium or like, I want to live life on the edge and take my girlfriend and son outside of the stadium and go and find a scalper and buy some tickets right before the game.
I think as long as they're, you know, when are you going in August, September?
End of August, last weekend of August, Labor Day weekend.
Who are they playing?
It's Giants Orioles.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I think you should be. You'll be able to find seats last minute.
Yeah, yeah. Unfortunately, I don't think those tickets are going to be in high demand at that point.
Nah,
with the way that the Orioles are playing.
Yeah,
would have liked to play in this trip when they're having more of a successful season. But you know,
the tricky part though is always: do I wait until like right before first pitch to get the best deal, or do I want to get in there a little bit ahead of time and kind of see it? In which case, you gotta. They'll come down some, but yeah, you gotta pay a little.
That's gonna be the move. Is I definitely want to get in for the pregame festivities, checking out the park and everything. You know, find the seats, chill, relax a little bit. But I'm stoked, and I'm stoked to be here.
Thank you for coming in. What has piqued your interest for this day? We are at the crossroads of transition of seasons.
Boy, I'll tell you what, doing a show prep in the middle of the dog days of summer.
Yeah, I know.
I was working hard yesterday.
Yeah.
I was working hard.
These are the dog days.
But there is some quotes and stuff coming out of that Netflix quarterback series. Did you watch the first season by chance?
No.
It is a great show. They also did The Receivers, which was the second season, but this is the second time they've been quarterbacks. But got some audio to play next. We have some quotes from Kirk Cousins coming out of there. Also want to talk about some year two quarterbacks. In the NFL, hour number two, we got some Blazers stuff to get to, NBA contract extensions, Big 12 Media Day has started. We got a lot to get to. Got a lot to get to today, but I want to wake up a little bit more. I need some inspiration. I need some fiery Joe Burrow. We have some fun with audio next here. Dirt and Sprague, a Joe Fish, a dish here on 1080 The Fan. Joe Fisher sitting in with you on Dirt and Sprague today. Second straight day of doing this 6 a.m. stuff. So I do got my energy drink, got my caffeine, but I need some spice. I need some fire to get me going. And that will come in the form of Joe Burrow. So Quarterback is the Netflix series, season two, if you will. They did Receivers last year, which was great. But this is just a great, you know, behind the scenes look, following the guys throughout the season. This season, it is Kirk Cousins, who we'll get to here in a bit, Jared Goff, and Joe Burrow. Joe Burrow is he's one of the more interesting ones where I'm intrigued to learn more about him. I just feel that his personality, you know, the whole Joe Cool thing, is that it's hard to get a read on him. As far as how he is in the locker room, how he is as a leader, how he is in the huddle, on the sideline. But this audio that we pulled, this comes from their game against Tennessee last year. I think I bet on this game, actually. I remember this. I bet on the Bengals to cover. And then the Titans had a late touchdown or something like that to cut it to 10. I was like, I swear to God. If the Bengals don't cover this against the lowly Titans. But there was a sideline interaction between him and Zach Taylor. And this is also a perfect, you know, like, hey, what you see on the sideline is not what you think it is. But Joe Burrow, towards the end of the game, as the final seconds were waning down, he was pissed. He was not happy. And it was like, what is his deal? Well, this is the audio from that interaction.
The penalty train rolls on.
What the f*** are we doing, man? Wake the f*** up! F***ing mental mistakes all f***ing day!
Way to finish the day. That's a great drive to finish it. I know it's a frustrating...
Embarrassing performance by us. F***ing embarrassing.
We'll address it. We'll address it, but at the same time, let's enjoy
that. We sucked today. That was embarrassing. Okay. We jumped off sides f***ing eight times.
I know that.
Sometimes I walk into an emotional moment that I know I'm walking into an emotional moment, and it becomes a really emotional moment, and it may be viewed as conflict. It's really just passion for the game.
You know, I understand that we won the game and we want to be happy that we win the game, but at the same time, when things aren't good enough, I'm not going to act like they were.
That Joe Burrow freaking out like that, I love that. Like, again, he has the whole Joe Cool moniker, and him just losing his mind at the end of the fourth quarter with a game that's basically in hand at that point because they're jumping off sides and being sloppy. I don't know if it makes Joe Burrow look better or if it looks Zach Taylor look worse, because I know Zach Taylor was kind of like trying to calm him down a little bit, but he was very much like, no, hey, it's all good. We had a great game. You know, let's praise the defense. And Joe Burrow's like, F that. We played like we sucked. We were embarrassing today. Well, like, I have a certain standard I want us to be to, and this is not it, especially when we're jumping off sides or false starts 8 times a day. Like, and then hearing Zach Taylor just kind of being like, hey, it's all right. It's okay.
That from your head coach is just more managing the situation at the time. The game's pretty much wrapped up.
F that.
We got film. We got a whole week to go back and we'll take everybody to task. But now's not the time. That's more just managing the situation than not being as upset, you know, about it, or letting your offensive line coach go in there with in the meeting on Monday or Tuesday, whenever they do it, and and pointing it out, and so they get it. So I don't think any less of Zach Taylor for that. But yeah, Bengals fans, you always wonder, you know, why is everybody so fired up for this guy? Well, that's it. So now can Bengals management, you know, spend some money on the defense and see if they can hold teams to under 30.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the Titans scored 27 on them, for God's sakes, in that game. But,
and they were awful.
I just loved that one quote from Joe Burrow, because this reminds me, there's a clip from Troy Aikman years ago, and I think it was during the Barry Switzer era, where there's audio of it, there's a clip of it somewhere where he is just going off on the sideline as well. There's that clip of Peyton Manning and Jeff Saturday getting into it, where he's yelling at him, he's like, just hike the damn ball, all right? Let me call the play, let me call the audibles, and they're just going at
the
each other's throats.
The trick to that for quarterbacks, for starting established quarterbacks, is not being like that all the time.
Yeah.
Picking and choosing the right moment, but having, no matter, you know, how many other all-pro future Hall of Fame players you have on that offense, I'm running the show, so this is how we're going to do it. And that's what makes guys that eventually win Super Bowls, despite the stats or how they may look aesthetically or who throws the prettier ball or deeper ball or whatever. But that leadership quality that is so hard to quantify for fans and truly understand what it's all about is the most important thing. And that's why guys like Jalen Hurts can win Super Bowls. And yet the debate is, well, he doesn't throw that great a ball and he's not this and he's not that. Those are the sorts of things. And so if Hurts ever agreed to do that, if they do another show like that, he would be one that I think would be helped tremendously in how he is perceived outside of Philadelphia and appreciating and truly understanding him if he was comfortable letting the cameras in that much.
Yeah. I can't wait to watch this. I mean, it is in the queue. I gotta get through Squid Games first, season 3.
I might be dialing this up here very shortly.
Honestly, I didn't watch the first season of Quarterback until...
Yeah, I'm not interested in receivers.
The receivers one wasn't bad, but I mean, we're now 2 seasons removed. Yeah. I mean, it was Davante Adams in Oakland. His first season.
That's just too much drama for me. I don't mind a little drama.
It was George Kittle, Amon-Ra St. Brown, and Debo Samuel. So, yeah. I mean, we're too far removed from it. But I love the first season of Quarterback. And there is one quarterback from that season that is in season 2. And that is Kirk Cousins. And he had a line that came from this episode that started to go around the internet about the situation with the Falcons last year.
Yeah, and we'll get to it.
Yeah, with Michael Penix. Actually, let's get to that next here on Dirt and Sprague on 1080 The Fan. But talking some quarterback stuff here on Dirt and Sprague at Joe Fisher Dish. Jason Swigart here with me as well. Played some audio from Joe Burrow, spicy Joe Burrow, from the quarterback show on Netflix. But there was some quotes coming out of this show from one Kirk Cousins about his time in Atlanta. I'll say this. Atlanta is now 0-2 as far as quarterbacks being on this show. The first season, it was Marcus Mariota and his Atlanta tenure. And now you have Kirk Cousins in Atlanta on this show. Michael Penix, stay far away from this show because this might start turning into a curse for any Atlanta quarterback that decides to go on this show or have the cameras follow him around for the season. But Kirk Cousins, he opened up about his free agency journey and eventually signing with the Atlanta Falcons for the season last year.
Wasn't expecting us to take a quarterback so high. At the time, it felt like I'd been a little bit misled, or certainly if I had the information around free agency, it certainly would have affected my decision. I had no reason to leave Minnesota with how much we loved it there if both teams are going to be drafting a quarterback high. But I've also learned in 12 years in this league that you're not entitled to anything. It's all about being able to earn your spot and prove yourself.
I'm mixed on how I feel about this because Kirk Cousins, he earned a lot of respect for me after watching that season one of him on the quarterback. That season with the Vikings where they went 13-3 or whatever. Just some of the clips from that season of the hits that he was taking and still bouncing up and still playing. Great dude in the locker room to have. Like, I really like Kirk Cousins and the mentality he brings and his whole story and his journey. But I don't know if I have this whole, like, victim, like, oh, poor Kirk Cousins here. Like, there was a part in this show where he also says that we had no reason to leave Minnesota. Like, where our life was at, we loved being in Minnesota. They wanted the long-term agreement from a team, and Minnesota was only willing to give him a year, and Atlanta was able to say, hey, we'll give you a 4-year, 180 mil, 100 million guaranteed. One, that dude is the ultimate bag chaser in the NFL. Like, he has made so far in his career, let's see if we got the total salary breakdown of career earnings for Kirk Cousins. He is at $294 million.
He's done okay.
Yeah, he's done just fine. So I understand you want the long-term commitment from a team, but going into last season, he had already made $264 million. If you loved Minnesota as much as you did and said you have no reason to go anywhere else, 1 year, $35 million to stay in Minnesota to keep your job, have Minnesota sign you on for maybe another 3 years after that, 2 years. You know, I know they had J.J. McCarthy waiting in the wings after the fact, and that was part of the reason that he wanted to go somewhere else too, is that Minnesota was considering moving on and starting over with a younger quarterback, which, funny enough, that's what the Falcons are somewhat doing now. But there's just part of me where I'm like, dude, you might have just stayed in Minnesota and been just fine with your 1 year, $35 million contract with Minnesota. But instead he goes to Atlanta, and then a few weeks later they draft Michael Penix, number 8 overall, and he is literally in basically the same situation that he would have been in Minnesota.
Well, I think with the point in his career, some of the injuries that he had sustained and gone through and rehabbed through, you want to go. I don't know that it was necessarily the bottom line dollar figure. It was more about the 3 years guaranteed. And when the team offered you that, I would imagine you, with the understanding that, yeah, it's going to be orchestrated. The offense going to be built around you and what makes you comfortable and how best you operate to take advantage of your skills, knowing it's probably the last contract you're going to be signing, at least long-term guaranteed, that sort of thing. So I see his point. I don't know if you say it out loud, and I don't know if Atlanta had Penix on the board at that point or figured he would be gone.
Well, I remember going into that draft. I mean, a lot of people, you know, draft experts were saying that he was a late to first round, maybe early second round pick. So him even going that high was surprising. And just Atlanta, after giving Kirk Cousins that contract, that was all very surprising.
It was. So I see his point of view where he's like, did I get sold a bill of goods here sort of thing? But if you're an NFL franchise, you're like, you could go down at any time. And we got to have something. So, and then ultimately it was his inability to perform when they needed him to perform, that, which is what happens anywhere in the NFL. Either you can't get on the field, or when you're on the field, you don't deliver. And eventually coaches and managers will make changes. They're not beholden to anyone seemingly, when it comes to scoring points or keeping the other team from scoring points. Well,
and that's what I'm intrigued to learn more about watching this show, is the drama of his injury midseason with his shoulder, which he definitely played down during the season because he even says at one point, like, I didn't want to leave the field because that is giving the opportunity to the guy behind me to play. And if I'm out for 3 or 4 weeks and he plays great, I may never see the field again, which there's part of me that doesn't blame him at all for that. In the NFL, I was talking about this with Schultzy last night before we jumped on the hot corner, where I was like, the whole quarterback mentor thing and looking out for your backup, F that as a starting quarterback in the NFL. Like, you should never have to worry about, like, I'm going to take him under my wing and make sure he knows the offense. Like, if he has a question, sure, answer it. But spending time out of your workday, essentially, to help him break down film or teach him more than, like, dude, I got my own things to worry about as the starting quarterback of an NFL franchise. If you are a left tackle and you have a rookie coming in to play right tackle, I get it. Maybe you want to, like, you're part of a unit. You want to have that unit to be successful. As a starting quarterback, it is a one-man job. You need to be looking out for yourself. And so, like, the whole not, like, having an injury and playing it down and being like, I'm good, I'm fine. One, it is a detriment to the team because you probably know that you shouldn't be out there. But this is kind of like what happened with Baker Mayfield a few years ago with the Cleveland Browns. It's like, dude, you should not be playing. And telling an NFL quarterback, any NFL athlete, hey, dude, you should not be playing. Like, you should come off the field. It's like, dude, can I walk? Am I breathing? Do I have a heartbeat? Yeah. Wasn't that the old XFL quarterback? I'm trying to remember because he played in the it's killing me. Was it Jeff Brom?
Maybe.
Where he says, do I have a heartbeat? Yes. Can I play football? Is this the XFL? Yes.
Oh, great.
I will be out there then. It's like telling any professional athlete, especially NFL players, hey, dude, you should probably not play. Like, I don't know if you're, it's like, good luck on that. But Kirk Cousins, I am very intrigued about that part of the show, too, to see how this whole process in Atlanta played out last year.
Yeah, we'll see if they end up moving him. I don't know what.
I don't know if they can this year. I think the potential out for his deal is after this season. So
yeah, but
I think he might just be a very, very expensive backup.
Week two, some team that thinks they've got all the pieces in place loses their starter for the year with a blown
and trades,
you know,
for him.
All bets are off at that point.
Yeah, his cap hit this year, $40 million. The potential out is after this season at 2026 is what it looks like. His dead cap number at that point goes from $75 million to $35 million next year, and then 12.5 million in the final year. So, yeah, I I just imagine he's going to be a very expensive backup for the Atlanta Falcons to Michael Penix, which as we get closer to this NFL season, the second year quarterback, like drama, every single one of them is going to be starting this year. Every second year quarterback. I know that the first year quarterback, the rookies, there's only going to be probably one with Cam Ward, maybe two with what we see in New Orleans. But I want to look at these second-year quarterbacks because there are still a lot of questions that remain for a few of these guys. We get to that next tier. Dirt and Sprague, a Joe Fisher dish right here at 1080 The Fan. Hour number two coming up. Get to some NBA stuff. Blazers. Win totals have come out in some betting markets.
Very curious.
Very, very curious. And just bags getting thrown around in the NBA, including one today. We'll get to that in hour number two. But Swag, year two quarterbacks, all six of them are going to be starting this year.
Yes.
That is Jaden Daniels, Bo Nix, Caleb Williams, Michael Penix, Drake May, and J.J. McCarthy. All six of those guys will be starting quarterbacks for their respective teams. Two of those had instant success in Jaden Daniels and Bo Nix.
Yes.
Caleb Williams had his moments. Drake May had his moments. And then Michael Penix, he was thrusted into the starting position late in the season as the Falcons were trying to make a postseason push. And then J.J. McCarthy obviously missed all of last year, so this will be really his rookie campaign, but his second season in the NFL. This will be super intriguing to track all of this. I mean, for Jaden Daniels and Bo Nix, are you able to replicate the success of what you just did in your rookie year? I mean, Jaden Daniels getting to the NFC Championship game with the Washington Commanders, Bo Nix having a surprising rookie season campaign to a lot of people. I mean, I think even, you know, this guy sitting here in an Oregon Duck polo was surprised at how well and how quickly he transitioned into being an NFL quarterback. We know about the sophomore slump. You get a year of film on dudes, what that's going to look like for those two. I would like to believe that both of them are still going to keep their success at a high level. The Bo Nix one, I am very curious about just because he had moments at the beginning of the season last year where he looked unsure of himself, would bail out of pockets early, seemed like he was more ready to scramble and get those yards and kind of take the easy 5 yards versus staying in the pocket a little bit longer and looking for those longer throws. Now, he was throwing some bombs towards the end of the year. I mean, the back half of the season, that he was letting it fly.
Yeah, you just get more coach gets more confidence in what he's willing to call, more faith and trust in the offensive line, more faith and trust in the receivers. And so, but a new head coach, you know, even though Sean Payton's experienced beyond all belief, but it just takes time to build trust. Trust is the hardest thing to create on a team. Especially now, both college and professional, there is so much turnover year to year between players and coaching staffs and other things going on, and you have an idea of how you think it should work, but very rarely does it all come together as fast. That's why what the Commanders did was really impressive.
Yes. Yeah. Begrudgingly so, as this Cowboys fan who hasn't seen an NFC championship since he was a baby, you know.
That's why I left them, pal. You'll be a lot better.
I will never forgive you for that. That is an unacceptable move from a grown man. As a high schooler, I had seen it happen from some high school friends.
It had
where they
nothing
jumped
to
ship.
Do. It had to do. No, this was sophisticated stuff. This was, I am sick of the person that's in charge selling me a bill of goods every damn year, trying to convince himself that this is the year. I was there. I saw how it was in the glory years. I remember there was nothing better.
I had a definite rage moment when I was in Bend a few weeks ago because I was there with my girlfriend and a few of her friends. And they're like, oh, let's watch DCC. I was like, what's DCC? They're like, Dallas Cowboys Cheerleaders on Netflix. I was like, oh, my. I was like, see, this is exactly the problem. I was like, you guys are loving this.
Huh?
I was like, no, of course.
He's Barnum and Bailey selling the circus.
Of course they have their own. I was like, I remember when it was on CMT. That was one thing. But now it's a whole Netflix production. Yeah. I definitely sat down and watched a couple episodes.
As far as the second year guys, I am probably most curious about Penix.
Yeah, I mean, really, all four.
There, because
the other four, they're all going to be intriguing.
That division is seemingly always winnable. I know Tampa's had a bit of a stranglehold, and they've had as much consistency there.
Yeah, they're going to, I imagine, they're the odds-on favorite. And
but,
it's,
you know, Atlanta has enough parts around it where you would think that they could do it.
Well, remember that game? I mean, last year against the Washington Commanders, where him and Daniels were going back and forth. He made some clutch throws down the stretch. I was watching a couple of highlights last night of Michael Penix. Again, here I am sitting in Oregon Ducks polo, but as far as that dude at Washington and coming out of the draft, he was the one quarterback, you know, outside of Caleb Williams going number one overall, where I'm like, dude, he's going to be good in the NFL. He can throw dots. He likes to stay in the pocket. Like, he has great pocket awareness. And I think that we saw that towards the end of the season a little bit more, is that he got much more comfortable as well.
Yeah, you wished maybe the transition had happened, you know, had Cousins been a little bit more forthcoming with how injured he was. Maybe that transition happens earlier.
Wasn't your hot take?
Yeah,
that Penix
he
was going
to lead
him
to the NFC Championship game.
So close.
I'd give him three more games. Maybe they sneak into the playoffs. I think most curiosity is going to be on Caleb Williams now getting Ben Johnson and a legitimate offensive guru there.
Yep.
So how does Ben Johnson translate to becoming a head coach? Then how does the offense start to fire on all cylinders? No franchise is more desperate for somebody to look competent at the quarterback position than the Bears.
Well, I would like to believe that Caleb Williams and the Bears are going to have a better season with a strong offensive mind. Who was their OC last year? Was it Shane Waldron, the former
Failed Seahawks offensive coordinator?
And I remember going into the season last year, I believe it was Jackson Smith Najigba who was like being interviewed in the offseason. They're like, what do you have to say to DJ Moore and the Bears receivers that are getting Shane Waldron as their offensive coordinator? I'm pretty sure he said good luck. And so, you could see like some of the route trees that they had DJ Moore running last year. It was nothing down the field. It was all short stuff. Like, they have dudes, they have athletes, they have some great options out there.
Well, they got to block it up,
take them downfield. And that's what you saw the Lions do a lot last year with their weapons, is space them out, get them down 10, 15, 20 yards.
And that was the first thing they addressed in the offseason with free agency. Let's get some veterans. Let's shore up the line to give him time. He can look down the field and isn't deer in the headlights.
Those longer developing routes, give him time to be able to see them through. And then, you know, biggest question mark, still J.J. McCarthy, I think. I mean, I mean, the nice thing is Minnesota has a great defense. That team is going to help him out in that sense to give him plenty of leeway.
Curious how much preseason he will play because he needs reps. But at the same point, if he's the guy, they don't want to expose him any more than they have to.
He's the one going into last year's draft where I was just like, I don't see it, man. Like what he did at Michigan, like he had a lot of talent around him, a really good team in that national championship run and where they didn't have to depend on him too much. But maybe it's one of those kind of late blooming that we see things we can work with. So let's take him in the first round and see what we have. The second year quarterback thing is going to be super intriguing this season. That is going to be one of the things that I keep my eye on. I mean, every team in their quarterback situation, there's a story with it, but the second year quarterbacks, every single one of them will be starting this year, for their teams. So can't wait for that. And just can't wait for football. Just please let these next month and a half, 2 months go by as quick as possible. For the love of God. The quarterback series on Netflix is definitely going to help with that. It'll definitely help with that. Hour number two coming up. Blazers. Are they done? Because it definitely seems like they're done. And there is one player on the team who I am 99.9% sure will be on this team on opening day. We also got some over-under win totals that are coming out in betting markets. And there are some bags being thrown around in the NBA for some extensions, which has me wondering where this is going to go in the future. Kind of piggybacking off of what Patrick and I talked about yesterday. We get to that. Hour number two coming up. Dirt and Sprague, Joe Fish a Dish right here, 1080 The Fan.